Did Don Draper really buy the world a Coke? Did Tony Soprano really die or just order more onion rings? Were those guys really in hell the whole time or was that just the audience? The finales of our favorite shows can make us argue, make us cry, and make us crazy. From Spotify and The Ringer, I'm Andy Greenwald, and this is Stick the Landing, a new podcast where we'll be telling the story of modern TV backwards, one fade out at a time. Each episode, a guest and I will choose a celebrated series from history, from the 70s to the streaming era and beyond, and do a deep dive on its very last episode. Was it all a dream? Did it turn into a nightmare? And, most importantly, what can we learn about tomorrow's new shows from the way yesterday's ended? TV is a journey. I hope you'll enjoy this podcast about the destination. Starting January 17th, find Stick the Landing on Wednesdays on the Prestige TV feed, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com. And joining me in the studio, he hears Bangkok is lovely this time of year. It's Andy Greenwald!
Chris, we got a lot to talk about today, but I was wondering, yesterday a lot of the great lions of the sports world stepped down.
I gotta say, I was emotional since Bill Belichick is a demon.
Yeah.
I don't really have like much of an opinion about Pete Carroll, I guess. And
seems like a cheerful guy.
Nick Saban probably killed my interest in college football just by his just utter dominance.
Yes.
But, you know, it is one of those things where you're like, man, getting older.
That's what I mean.
These guys are all in their 70s. We're all in our 40s, you know?
Should we address the rumors? Because I feel like when people were...
I'm stepping down.
Yeah, I feel like people were like, oh, something's in the air for the great legends.
To take over the University of Alabama's men's football program?
No. I think that people were worried that, like, much like Belichick's championship run, that, like, you know, a good thing has come to an end and people were looking to you and being like, are you stepping down?
I'm always going to be here. Yeah.
I mean, it's been...
Here in Studio 6, just podding away.
It's been 12 years.
It has been. Is this the anniversary?
Something around now. I don't know. Later January.
We're not sticklers. I'm not really a stickler for my anniversary with my wife either. There's a fluid date there.
Really?
Well, we started dating.
Yeah.
In the early 2000s.
I remember.
But we didn't get married until 2015.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, when do you call it?
You know, I still remember. I was in California for the winter break, and I remember talking to you on the phone.
Yeah.
And you were like some news. This is before Twitter, but you still spoke that way.
Some personal news.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
I hope it lasts. Genuinely. I didn't doubt.
Yeah. You were really supportive.
I was the one that believed.
Andy, today on the show, we're going to do some news at the top. We've got a special announcement from, I wouldn't even say Watch Productions, but I guess it is kind of because it's featuring you and it's produced by Kaya McMullen. It's your new podcast venture.
Thank you. Yes. I do want to be clear for legal purposes. Kaya and I have our own venture now.
Oh, did you guys start an LLC?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Where is it? Where is it located?
The LLC stands for Lots of Liability.
Did you see the laundromat? Do you know where it needs to be located? Yeah.
We're launching something new.
I think this is fantastic. So tell people what it is.
So launching a new little podcast journey. It's called Stick the Landing. And every episode, I'm going to be talking to a friend, colleague from the larger Ringer sphere, mm-hmm. podcast pals, Each episode will be focused on a different series finale.
Yeah.
Of a beloved or contentious or what have you television show from throughout history, not just recent history.
Yeah.
And do a deep dive on that episode, on the context for that episode, and consider how it was received in the moment, and then also take the opportunity to be like, well, what do we think of it now? And how, what can we learn about where TV is going from where it's been? Primarily because, as we've talked about many times over the years on this podcast, the whole idea of ending something was never, ever part of the calculus for TV for many, many decades.
Yeah, it was like, let's hope we don't have to, right? Like, let's see how far we can get without worrying about, like, how this is going to wrap
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And that has very much changed, obviously, in the streaming era. But so far, it's been fun. We've banked a bunch of episodes. We're going to premiere them on January 17th on my favorite feed.
The Prestige TV Prestige podcast, TV yeah.
feed, you know. Maybe we'll throw one up here.
I think that I am not, so currently I'm not on this show.
We're, you know, I'm talking to your people.
And what's that been like for you?
Lonely. Frightening. I mean, thank God Kai has been here with me. She's been my rock. And the only thing that she's really had to do is like sort of calm me down. Cause I'm always like, let's schedule more. Let's work harder. Let's do more episodes. And Kai is like, hey.
Let's start earlier in the day.
Yes. Let me get here on time. That's kind of always my thing. So I appreciate that. So no, we're still trying to find, you know, Kai and I, when we sort of, you know, go offline and we talk about stuff, we're like, how can we fit CR into this? Mm-hmm. Should we? You know, we're not afraid of asking the hard questions.
I think I'll probably be appearing on Stick the Landing. I can't wait to listen to that. When does that premiere again? January
17th. We got, so far, we got a good group of episodes
one
and
a
shows.
Week?
And yeah, that's what they tell me.
I just didn't know if you were going to drop the binge like Echo.
Oh, well, it is similar to Echo in that this is The Ringer's first TVMA podcast.
That's right.
I also did do a second audio feed in Choctaw. Of the show.
It's very big of you.
Yeah.
So today we are going to talk a little bit about Echo. We're going to do some news at the top. We're also going to spin the hype cycle a little bit for two shows that are airing on Sunday night that we're really excited about and that we'll be talking about extensively throughout their seasons. That's True Detective Night Country and Monsieur Spade.
Yes.
How's my French on that one?
Pas mal.
Okay. Monsieur Spade is on AMC and it is about Dashiell Hammett's famous detective Sam Spade, who is the sort of hero or anti-hero or protagonist, at least, of The Maltese Falcon, one of the great, great detective films of all time, one of the great detective novels. And it's from Scott Frank, who did The Queen's Gambit, obviously, but is one of the great screenwriters of the last 30, 40 years. And Scott Frank directed all the episodes. He did this show with Tom Fontana, who did Oz, did Homicide: Life on the Street, is one of like the sort of bedrock television creators over the last couple decades. And they came up with this incredible idea of what happens next to Sam Spade. And it is it places him in France in the 1950s and 60s. And it is, of what I've seen so far, fantastic. I can't wait to talk about it with you. We're going to have some special guests over the course of the season to talk about it with us, and I hope people check it out. And then True Detective Night Country, as I've alluded to, is a fucking banger. Yeah. And we'll come to you guys live, not live, we'll come to you Sunday night.
I'll be here live.
Andy will be here live for the SAG Awards. Andy's going to come on Sunday night.
Yeah.
We'll have our breakdown of the first episode and a special interview with Issa Lopez, who created this season of Night Country, directed the episodes, and was one of my favorite guests we've had in a long time.
That's awesome.
A dynamite interview subject. So we can do some of that. But let's talk a little bit about some of the news.
Should we just one last thing, just one last plea for Monsieur Spade? Since we probably won't be covering it in detail till next Thursday, because the Monday show, Sunday night Monday show, will be True
Detective.
I love Monsieur Spade.
Yeah.
I love it. It is an absolute joy to watch, and I'm so excited to talk
about
it.
It's TV writing on like a really high level. It's beautifully acted, and I think that sometimes, you know, you and I have like kind of settled into our ways and we know exactly what we like, but this is exactly what we like. It's a detective at a farmer's market
in France.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I used to, when I would go to my therapist's office in New York and talk to him, he's an older man, and no matter what time of year, no matter what year, he would always have like an 800-page book about Congress. You know, like just like, and I'm not just talking about like the Robert Caro books. I'm just like, whatever the hot new congressional book was, right. You'd just be like getting into it. And I'd be like, I guess when you reach a certain age, you just get in your bag. Like you have your thing.
Yeah.
And now I'm beginning to understand that. But I would argue that this show is just so beautifully crafted that even if our bag isn't necessarily yours, you should give it a shot.
Yeah, if you're not using a mesh or rope bag at the farmer's market,
yes.
maybe you will, you know, after watching Mr. Spade. Okay, so we're very excited about those shows next week. And I think also on Thursday, I'd love to hit the end of The Curse.
Yeah,
so,
and Fargo ends next week, right?
Fargo,
and I am caught up on Fargo, but it felt weird to jump in with an episode to go.
I would also say that Fargo, this is an observation, is certainly saving a lot of resolution for the end of for the finale, it seems as though. And I have had mixed feelings about Fargo this season.
Yeah.
I think I really loved the way it started and have enjoyed elements of the second half of the season, but found that they're sort of like, basically, it's like they're letting a lot of eggs hatch in the finale, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so that's the right move.
Thought it would be good for us to talk about it then. You know what? For season two of White Lotus, which was a huge success for HBO.
Can I ask you one thing about season two of White Lotus?
Mm-hmm.
Don't look. When did that air?
2022.
When?
Summer?
December.
Really?
I had no idea. I couldn't. I
have
wasn't
no
sure
recollection.
What year the
no
show
recollection.
Aired.
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
Season two became, I think, because season one's success and it's kind of became this iconic show, especially of the pandemic. Season two casting wish fulfillment became a huge thing. And maybe a little less so for season three, just because I think everything has kind of gotten back to, everything is back on track for the most part. But people, I did not notice as much like make Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya happen for season three of White Lotus wish casting.
That was True Detective season four wish casting.
But we do have a cast for White Lotus season three and we have a location.
I don't know if I agree with your assumption there. I feel like people were angling. I think people were excited to see who was going to get brought into the machine.
Well, you and I are on different forms of social media now.
That's true.
You know, you're on Facebook, you're on Meta, you're mostly reading comicbook.net reports about, you know, Jeremy Renner possibly picking up the bow and arrow again. Mm-hmm. And I'm on God's platform.
Truth Social.
Yeah. Anyway, the White Lotus season three cast has been announced. It's Carrie Coon, who seriously, like in the running for HBO MVP of the last 10 years between Leftovers, Gilded Age, and now this. Parker Posey seems like a match made.
This
honestly,
is what I'm
in
saying.
Heaven.
This is what I'm saying that I wish that, as you know, I do not understand betting or gambling whatsoever. But if there were like FanDuel odds on who Mike White is going to cast in White Lotus,
yeah.
I feel like I would have been so in on Parker Posey and Leslie Bibb. That just feels like, that's just so obvious to me. And I'm kicking myself. And by the way, this is a good thing. This is, thank you. Thank you for uplifting Parker Posey into the show.
So we got Parker Posey, Leslie Bibb, Jason Isaacs, Michelle Monaghan, and then returning from season one, Natasha Rothwell. So
I need her on this show to wash the taste of Wonka out of my mouth.
Is she in Wonka?
For some reason, yes.
Oh, who does she play in Wonka?
A lady.
Do you want to get some Wonka takes off your chest? I'm not going to see it. So
I can't. I'm worried that...
A free hit.
I'm just worried that my daughters will, for the first time today, give in some interest in this podcast and listen, and then they'll know that I've been lying to them about Wonka.
Do you lie to your kids about your takes on things?
It's one thing... I try not to, but they... I see this happening, and I remember this from my childhood, too, that sometimes when they love something, and they saw Wonka in the theater with their mom, and then we watched it, they really wanted me to see it because they loved it, and I had a screener. And so I could feel them watching me watch it.
Mm.
And I didn't want to be like, this is puerile. Like, it is, my guy made Paddington, Hugh Grant is great in it, like, I respect all the people involved, Chalamet really goes for it.
Yeah.
I thought it was awful, like really, really awful.
Okay, but you didn't, you tried to keep that from them since that might be their favorite movie of all time for all you know.
And they want to listen to the songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, shout out Neil Hannon, The Divine Comedy, definitely someone who was in the NME a lot when we were reading it in the 90s.
He wrote the songs
all
for
the songs.
Wonka?
Yes.
Wow, get the bag.
Yeah. bag full of treacly candy. Yeah. Anyway, I'm happy for Natasha Rothwell. I prefer her performance in The White Lotus.
Me as well. I also, she's incredible and Insecure. Yes. I was wondering whether or not, so at the beginning of relationships, I remember the beginning of my relationship with my now wife. There is a period that I would describe as a cultural honeymoon where you just are so into this person.
Oh, yeah.
That you're like, I will not only watch whatever you want to watch, but seem passionate and deeply invested
and
in
be open
what
to
watching.
It. Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this person whom I now hold in such high esteem will introduce me to something.
Yeah.
Or I could see things through her eyes.
And now, in retrospect, knowing my lovely wife the way I do, I know now that that was an act. And
for her or for you?
For her, yeah.
Oh, you mean that like was, being interested in your things?
Yeah, like when I was, it was like the fourth night I spent over at her apartment and I was like, do you want to watch a movie? And she was like, sure, what do you want to watch? You're and right. I was like, have you ever seen Slapshot?
what a romantic.
Well, there are couples in Slapshot.
Set the scene for me. Was like candles lit and you were staring at each other's eyes? Did you hold it for a beat and be like,
it was just a moment where like I could have said anything.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And now this is the early 2000s. So, you know, it was, I don't know what would have been my like truly like dog shit crime movie I could have shown her.
Right.
But I remember we watched like Slapshot, Miller's Crossing, a couple of like either sports or violent movies, or both in the case of Slapshot.
Because you guys took like a long holiday together that first.
No.
No, not away, but like you guys just like left the world for a few days and watched movies
and stuff.
We left
the world behind, as Barack and Michelle might say.
It's true.
And, but yeah, like I definitely got all my movies in then. And then like one day she woke up and she's like, I don't want to watch Goodfellas. You know, like, you know, I got the real person.
Has she ever seen Heat?
I think she has.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it. I definitely know that she thought it was too long. My point being, I was wondering whether or not kids get the same cultural honeymoon. Like, at what point will you turn to your child and just be like, I hate this?
I mean, people who listen to this podcast know this. I'm not very good at hiding my feelings. I generally...
You really aren't.
I have very strong opinions. So... I think the older one sees through it because I'm like, she was like, what part did you like? And I was like, so many parts. So many parts.
I can imagine you turning into Richard Brody as you talk.
A billion percent. But I was also like, I was like, I liked Willy Wonka's costume a lot. Oh, what a fine coat he wears. You know, it was not my best.
Why do you sound like you're in Mary Poppins?
Because I was trying to distract them with a reference to a movie we all liked.
Okay.
It was rough. It was rough. But in fairness, in my defense, there is no cultural honeymoon for things I like.
True.
They could not.
That's the thing. Nobody understands
less.
What it's like for middle-aged white men.
Yes. You know? Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not interested in movies or music that I like. So, so you know.
Do you ever try to put on like a band in the car and you're just like, maybe you guys would like this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, partly because I can't wait to hear your take on this, on what would you would do with your ward, the 15-year-old that you're going to bring home. And
as
be
I'm
like,
digging him to travel baseball.
Time practice. To learn about hardcore on this drive to Bakersfield. No, I part of me thinks I don't know how to walk the line, right? Because I am the child of someone who had my father's very strong opinions.
Yeah.
And he was and likes things very much that he likes, but was not very generous with him. So not to say that I would have become a great fan of the English composer Ralph Vaughan Williams if he had been like, here's his third sonata and why it's moving to me. But it is notable that he was never like, son, this is my music.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't want to do, so I'm trying to walk the line of being like, I want them to develop their own taste, but I shouldn't just be silent. They shouldn't be like, dad didn't like things.
Yeah, dad was this just opaque, kind of like unreadable.
He was always quiet in the car, except for some guy talking about basketball games all the time. And dad never watches the games. He just listens to this man talk about them. Yeah. That's weird.
And the man kept trying to send one man from another team to another team.
Yeah, it was in referring to this man, the piece.
Yeah.
Whoever that man is.
He kept calling himself Picasso.
Yeah, it's weird. That's weird for them.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the correct line is. Like, do you feel, did you get And I think we should open this up to Kaya too. Like, did you feel like you were handed a, you know, a manifesto of like, here's the meaningful culture as a parent?
I think I was given the palette and the paints. The canvas was mine.
That's beautiful.
So there was a lot of culture on in the house,
right?
And it was not necessarily mitigated for like my tastes.
Sure.
But because of that, I wound up seeing or reading or hearing things early in my life that I think were pretty formative, I would imagine.
Like I Am Curious Yellow?
No, but to our Mr. Spade conversation, I saw Maltese Falcon when I was like 12 or something. Like,
that's cool.
That was like, if you like cop shows or if you think Miami Vice is cool, you should watch this. Oh, and I was like, I do think Miami Vice is cool.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Wait, but I think that's interesting though, like in terms of building a taste, being like, I see that you are interested. Like for me, it could be like, I see that you are interested in shows about talking dogs from Australia.
Yes. Have you thought about watching Road Warrior?
Or Colin from Accounts.
Yeah, yeah.
Dog doesn't talk, but you know.
Yeah. It's Kaya, was there a lot of, in the McMullen house?
No,
did
not
Kaya
really
call the shots, or did your parents, were your parents like, check out the Beatles?
That was a tell, by the way.
I think my dad pushed me towards a lot of like Nirvana-esque rock.
Oh.
My dad is a big like serious Lithium Radio guy.
Wow.
And then other than that,
her dad is our peer, by the way.
Does your dad want to come on the pod?
Other than that, like as far as like movies and TV goes, like not really.
Okay.
I was like pushed towards like Scooby-Doo and like Cartoon Network.
Has your dad heard 60 songs that explain the 90s?
I don't think, my dad doesn't really listen to podcasts, but one of his friends did reach out to him and was like, hey, I listened to this podcast from The Ringer. And then my dad was like, do you work on this? And I was like, I don't. And he was like, okay.
Happy New Year.
Talk to you next year.
Exactly.
I don't even remember where we are. White Lotus, cultural honeymoons, et cetera. White Lotus. Let's just stay there. Do you have much of an interest in Thailand?
Huge.
As a destination for your own travels, or just in terms of its
that's
like
a loaded question.
Yeah,
be careful.
That's true. My bad.
I have traveled to Thailand.
Have you?
I have. Yeah.
When?
In 2011. I remember writing things for Grantland from my hotel room.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Why didn't you just take a vacation?
You're one to talk. Come on. It was all still kind of tenuous. I remember like contributing to some like staff roundup of things we wanted to see done. I don't know. I've been to Bangkok and I've been to the south, like where I think they're shooting the season, to Koh Samui.
Oh, wow.
Incredibly beautiful.
Good show.
I love books. There's a couple great novel series. John Burdett's mystery books set in Bangkok are awesome. And Timothy Hallinan has a series, crime novels set in Thailand. Read them all.
You never cease to surprise me.
I try to cease, honestly. I want you to know everything, but I'm a huge, huge, huge fan culturally. I love it.
Don't have like
this.
A huge Thailand bug. Hmm. I'm not. I've never been like. I gotta see it. I'd love to see Vietnam, but I've never been to Asia. So,
well, that's where we're bringing the pod next. Kaya, what's our listenership in Asia? What are our growth markets?
Yeah, but specifically, like, what's the demo? Do you think it's like?
Do you think the people in the south of Thailand listen to the end of the podcast, or do they mostly drop off after the first 10,
why are you?
Minutes?
Why are you so obsessed with this?
I mean, if you guys want to do a watch sponsored trip to Thailand, then I think we can pump those numbers up.
Yeah, we can.
All right, Casey, get out.
Why am I worried about that? Because I feel like we just scatter gems throughout the podcast.
Well, maybe people are saving it for later. You never know. You know.
Sure.
So
wait. So your take is this is a bad idea. You're out on season.
No,
three.
I was just like I'd been to Hawaii. I love Hawaii, and I don't think I've been to that specific part of the Mediterranean, but I do love it. And this is the first one that I've never been to. That's all. It's not even a really particularly interesting thing to say. The connections to the first season will be interesting. Natasha Rothwell's character, if people remember, was going to start her own spa based on seed investment from Jennifer Coolidge, who then reneged on that. Mm-hmm. And we know what happened with that whole thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil season two of White Lotus, but I'm curious to see how he continues to build up the sort of continuing character mythology of the show.
Just phenomenal vibes heading into season three.
Love
I think
it.
High Q rating, everyone's happy. It's not going to be bad.
It's probably 25, I would imagine. I mean,
I think they've confirmed that.
Okay, yeah. So 25 for that. Another thing I wanted to mention to you was the Mandalorian movie announcement.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this came out a couple of days ago with seriously some of the funniest art I've ever seen was like attached to, I think it was like on the Star Wars site, and it's just a painting of the Mandalorian flying away with Baby Yoda in his arms from an exploding spaceship.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how I imagine myself waking up every morning.
that's the...
when I jump in the car to drive down Sunset.
Is Grogu, is that your takes then? Like your good ideas that you're cradling?
That's right. I guess I would just mention two things. One, I would imagine that this now takes the place of a season four of Mandalorian.
Maybe.
I would imagine that whatever story Jon Favreau, who's going to be directing this, and Dave Filoni, who I think is going to be writing it with him, wanted to tell, they've decided to do it on the big screen. The thing I am most fascinated about is we spend so much time wondering what actually marks success for a streaming show.
Yes.
Because it's so hard to understand the numbers.
Yes.
Each platform, each service seems to use different metrics for, hey, this was successful, or got this many hours, or this many starts, or this many completed episodes, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt that The Mandalorian is probably the most successful Star Wars thing since Force Awakens, but it will be interesting to see it against the box, like just the hard data of box office numbers. And I would argue anecdotally that The Mandalorian has been declining in casual interest among fans who are not like, I'm hardcore into the Filoni-verse. I really care about this era of storytelling. So this is interesting also because I think last year, Favreau was talking about sort of mapping out season four as they finished season three. And, you know, he said he viewed The Mandalorian as one long story, but he said that they also had this responsibility, and this is a quote, to understand what's happening on other shows, even Skeleton Crew, which is yet to air. That's the Jude Law show. And they all take place in the same Star Wars period. So there's a lot more things that we have to keep in mind and stuff that we've built up from previous seasons of The Mandalorian as well. What do you make of this jump to the big screen?
I have a question. What is a movie? Like, genuinely, what is a movie?
For sure.
This, to me, seems so cynical and lame. Because on paper, this is every corporation's dream. Do you need actors for this movie? Because how many days on set is Pedro Pascal legitimately going to do unless he breaks his armor in the first scene and has to actually be there, which is not the case. Grogu is not, sorry, earmuffs if you care about this, is not an actual living Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
It's a puppet.
I still haven't confirmed that my wife understands that.
That's who I was thinking of about earmuffs, but luckily we know she doesn't listen to this podcast.
She's famous, whatever, for saying that the only two guests that she would ever really care about being on the Bill Simmons podcast would be Timothy Chalamet and Baby Yoda. And I said, you do understand that one of those things is in play. The other just can't happen.
And she wasn't sure which is which.
And she was like, which one?
That's fair.
Yeah.
They don't need to reserve any locations or build sets, right? Because, so what is it? It's just a 90-minute episode that they would shoot in Manhattan Beach on the volume anyway? You know, I find the whole thing really dispiriting, frankly, because as you said, like, the show launch, the first season of The Mandalorian is very, very good because of its casual...
Because it's Gunsmoke.
And because it's just low-key, fun, week-to-week television show. Very quickly, it went the way of most branded IP entertainment in this day and age, which is, oh, now we have to know about the Darksaber and Bo-Katan and the history of Mandalore. And by the end, it's like, I guess Boba Fett was its own show, sort of, although Book it just Boba became Fett, The Mandalorian midway through. It's so up its own ass, and then, or I guess up its own Sarlacc pit, that... Now they're going to be like, no, now it's for everyone. No, it's very clearly not. It's just very clearly the next chapter in something that has, I believe, limited appeal. And I don't really have the scar tissue built up about what's going on with Star Wars.
Yeah.
That I ought to.
Do you mean to like have some fun with it? You're like mad about it.
I'm a little mad about it. Yeah. That they've had all these years to be like, what should we do with this hallowed property? And they're like, we'll do episode 10 and season 4.
Right.
That's our plan.
I would just be interested to see them convert something to the big screen in general. It's been a while. There's been some, you know, obviously, like, they had the Benioff and Weiss flirtation. There was going to be more Rian Johnson action. There's a Taika thing. Like, you know, like they have not, there was a Feige movie. They haven't really.
Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, Rogue Squadron. So there's been a lot of stops and starts. It seems like the one person who can turn the engine over there is Filoni.
Well, now he's been given the keys.
And he's been given the keys to do that. So my hope would be is if they were going to do this on the big screen, that they would tell a story that wasn't just chapter 11 of 12 in a story of this kind of scope. And that also that there was, they took advantage of perhaps a larger budget and a wider, like a bigger canvas, you know, like make it feel more important than like, oh, that was on Thursday night. You know,
I just feel like, and I recently rewatched, not to, I was about to say not to be cliche, but come on, we're in year 12 of this. Like I watched A New Hope, Star Wars.
Did
recently
you?
With, over the break. Yeah. With my daughters, who were willing to give it a shot again. And first of all, good movie.
Yeah.
Really holds up.
Yeah.
Do you know what's good about it?
Harrison Ford?
Harrison Ford is good about it.
Yeah.
We are now 46 years into them being like, people, I think, want more Muppets. I think that's what people like here is Muppets.
And as a child, I was intrigued by the Muppets.
Yeah, but it's a nice balance.
Yeah, but I was very intrigued by the guy in the vest who was funny.
Yes. Was that Harrison Ford?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
When's the last time you watched A New Hope?
Pretty recently.
So you know, and I'm sure listeners know this as well, is that like the canonical streaming version of that movie is the one that has the let's draw a weirdly pygmy Jabba the Hutt.
So that's the one that's on Disney Plus.
That's the one that everyone's watching.
The Lucas version.
But it's like there's this one scene that makes no sense where Jabba's kind of human size because they were drawing him over an actor they cast and shot in the 70s. And he's just like, Uda Solo. Like, well, okay.
Yo.
What's
you're
up?
Fluent in Jabba.
It's called... I don't know what it's called.
What language it is?
Shit. Ah, man, I wish I had that. If I just had that in the bag.
Last one news thing that I was just kind of noting is just Tokyo Vice is coming back in February.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you gave people 100 guesses of shows that came out on HBO over the last 2 years that would get another season, this would not be in the top half.
Yeah, surprising.
But I thought that this first season was excellent. I had Michael Mann on The Watch when we talked about the pilot episode, which he directed.
That's amazing.
It was still very, just can't believe that happened. But I thought the whole season was excellent. And it's really cool that they're doing it. And it makes sense because this Jake character, who's the Ansel Elgort plays in the show, there's no reason why he can't go on to another story, which is essentially what he's doing.
He's a reporter.
Yeah, and then the Yakuza and the cops that he knows are going to be a part of it. And Ken Watanabe is so good in this, so.
Have you and Ansel Elgort squashed your beef, do you think?
I had no contact with him.
That's notable.
Yeah. Okay. Our beef is, to me, it's over. There's the
See,
statute of limitations.
That's what I wanted to hear. Can I just let you know that while you were talking, I was on my computer and
filling an application for the New England Patriots head coaching job, or
yeah, I think I could at least get in the door. It's one an interview. He speaks Huttese.
Okay,
but I was interested that my
Jabba the Hutt,
Jabba the Hutt,
not Ansel Elgort. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he might, but when you start to type, what language did Jay, the autofill, is Jesus?
Uh huh. What language did he speak?
Huttese.
Can you do just give
beautiful.
Me a little bit of Jesus doing Jabba?
Just a little New Testament? I'm going to have to workshop that. But
Did you see Scorsese is just like, I'm straight up making a Jesus movie because the Pope asked me?
Yeah.
He didn't ask him directly. The Pope just was like...
The Pope put out changed his status on Instagram?
A call for submissions, essentially. He was just like, I think we could use some new content about Christ.
About JC?
And Marty's like, I got you.
I think that's great.
And he's going to like be in it.
Marty?
Yeah.
I'm here for this late period stuff. Like, I'm into it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love the end of Killers.
Yeah. Was that up for debate?
No, I was just thinking about, no spoilers, but Martin Scorsese appears in the film.
Yeah.
I love that.
Have you fired that up on Apple TV Plus to do a second run through?
Where do you find the time?
Yeah.
No. Are you interested in doing that?
I think so. I'd like to see it before the Oscars. I mean, I've seen it, but I would like to do it again.
Did you watch John Mulaney's speech, opening monologue as the host of the Governor's Ball?
I did.
I recommend everyone do that. It's very, very funny.
Do the Globes just not pay well enough?
I think the issue with the Globes was it's tarnished. And someone was like, why would we, what's the point here?
Right.
I don't see the win, you know?
It just seems like all of these barely broadcast alternative awards shows have completely competent hosting situations worked out. But yes, the big ones, it's either we can either get Jimmy Kimmel or it's a fucking...
Or Anthony Anderson's doing the Emmys this week.
Yeah. Or it's just an absolute chaos factory, you know? And then like all the other ones like SAG and Independent Spirit and Gotham and all these things are just like, hey, you know... Like,
well, Mulaney and Kroll did...
Just get like a decent comedian to just do 10 minutes at the top and then keep it moving.
Because I just want to come on Mulaney... reads the email he got from WME inviting him to put himself on tape for the role of young cop. It was very funny, but the best bit is he finally speaks to the thing that I've been wanting someone to talk about, which is why is Rami Malek in Oppenheimer? It's really funny. It's great.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, should we talk about Echo?
Yes, I think we've all. I think this is going to be an interesting segment because we took wildly divergent paths.
Two paths diverged in a wood.
Yeah,
and I took. I don't. This idea was not to be a flippant one.
Okay,
but the five episodes went up the other night in a binge, and the full season went up on Disney Plus.
Right,
and I realistically knew that we probably weren't going to be able to like cover or talk about Echo for five episodes of our podcast. And also we may not have the desire to do so. Mm-hmm. So I thought an interesting experiment might be at play here where Andy took the first episode.
This is incredible retconning. Yes.
And then I texted Andy and I was like, I'm going to watch the fourth episode.
First of all, tone is not communicated in text. Sometimes this is going to surprise people, but sometimes we like to keep it light. In the old iMessage, you know, we say some stuff to each other that's that's joking.
Uh-huh.
Like, for example, yesterday we were recording something else and you woke up to a text from me saying, I may be late. I've had an elective medical procedure and have been under anesthesia since Saturday.
You sent it at 7.02 a.m.
Yeah, and I sat on it for 90 minutes before sending. You're welcome. And, you know, longtime politicos understand that I was referencing the bizarre situation involving our current Secretary of Defense. But Chris was like, just wrote back, question mark?
But you're like an aging man. Like, it's totally in the realm of possibility that you could have been under general anesthetic.
But you had seen me earlier in the week. I wasn't at my best, to be fair, on Monday with Jason, but I was here.
I hope Lloyd Austin is feeling better.
Me too. Yeah. I root for health, yeah, generally.
Sure.
But anyway, so when you texted me, I'm going to watch the fourth episode of Echo.
I read Jen Chaney's piece on Vulture about how Echo needs to be watched in totality, or that like it's good that it's all up because where it winds up and where it goes is really interesting. So I thought maybe you could handle the beginning.
Okay.
Of Echo.
Wow.
And I will tell you what happens at the end, or we can just not. Well, we don't have to spoil it.
Uh-huh.
But I thought it might be an interesting way to approach this. And frankly, like I think that it sounds like. I mean, I read about it. I think I understand how it starts and everything, and I understand the relationships between the characters.
Are you sure? Because the show isn't sure that you are. They really want to make sure you know.
So this was a. I don't want to tarnished or troubled production or anything like that. But there was some reporting around Echo that it was originally supposed to be 8 episodes, that it was essentially like deemed unreleasable. That was a Jeff Snyder report by Kevin Feige, that he was like, can't put this out. And that it was almost entirely reshot and then...
Reshot or re-edited? I don't really know.
And then brought down to 5 episode release.
And pivoted from... a typical Marvel TV release to something that would be MA.
It's also Marvel Spotlight, which is their designation for things that they don't think you need
to watch.
A ton of other Marvel context clues to watch. Mm. So that you could watch the Echo story and not have to have seen. I would recommend, if you were very interested and want to be a completist, seeing Hawkeye. But
I want people to understand and differentiate us as hosts. I would never tell you to watch Hawkeye.
I still think Hawkeye was fine.
Wow.
In the grand scheme of all of these shows, I think it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Hawkeye is to the Marvel shows as Solo is to Star Wars movies. That's the way I'll put it.
One that you just bizarrely defend? that's like...
So you basically get... This is a very interesting statement about where Marvel is at, that they have put this up as a binge watch in mid-January.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they have anything else on the schedule now until Deadpool, either on screen or in the big screen or on TV. And then the only other thing that I think that they have in the hopper for Disney Plus this year is Agatha, but we don't have a release date for Agatha, right?
And the title keeps changing.
Well, I love all the titles though, so I hope they just never stop.
They are good.
What did you think of what you watched of Echo? And like I said, we are not trying to be flippant in our approach. It was really more of like an experiment since this all went up at once.
I mean, I was joking, but I'm genuinely curious what your experience was, because I found the first episode of this to be absolutely confounding. Really more of like a, what are we doing in the world of entertainment? I want to be very clear here. There are so many talented people involved in this. I think the direction is uniformly very good by Sidney Freeland. The action scenes are very, very eye-catching. They're well choreographed. They're surprising.
They hit hard. They're good.
I think the cast, I mean, other people have commented on this. There are a lot of people who we've grown to love from Reservation Dogs showing up on this show, like Zahn McClarendon and Graham Greene and Devery Jacobs.
Tantu Cardinal.
And Chesk Spencer, who was in one of our favorite shows of 2 years ago, The English, has a very big role in this. It's fantastic to see him in it. So what I want to try to articulate is my criticism is of the project, not of the people giving their all to do a good job in it. And again, we said this when we talked about it, when they announced the Switch, being like, fuck it, we'll just make a hardcore action show.
Mm-hmm.
That seems smart. That seems like a smart pivot and hopefully a sign of more of these kinds of like, let's just be honest about what we have here, as opposed to we're just going to try to force something that we've committed to without a lot of consideration down the audience's throat. But that said, I found it so bizarre that the whole, you know, the bubbling backstory of this was you did not need to know too much to get into the show. The first episode is 58 minutes of cobbled together, either retconning, flashbacking, found footage, previously seen footage from Hawkeye, all explaining the entirety of Maya, aka Echo's life story from when she is a child,
yeah,
up beyond the end of where we leave things in Hawkeye.
Right.
And at no point does it seem like it was a mandate to be like, just make something good people are going to watch. It's this deep, trudging feeling of homework that is bizarre for something that honestly just, she kicks ass and she's deaf. We get it.
Mm-hmm.
Show us. Just go, 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 go. I'm not really, I just think generally, and this is both as a fan of watching things that have some momentum, but also just after a decade plus of the superhero stuff, like, I'm sure they had a tough childhood. I get it. Yeah. Most characters on television did.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I think that that's an interesting distinction to be making, is whether or not it's a superhero show, because I think that there's the bones of some really interesting stuff in here, especially this character who's kind of, it's kind of positioned as an anti-hero at various points, you know, and is kind of on that spectrum of street level Marvel characters like Daredevil and Jessica Jones that had Netflix shows in the past,
mm-hmm.
And exists in this kind of gritty New York City milieu, and like they go out and fight crime, but like also maybe commit some crimes themselves in the process. And taking this character who's, I think, very wonderfully inhabited by Alequa Cox, and bring her back to Oklahoma and having her kind of get in touch with her roots, but also be like kind of fending off her kingpin association, mm-hmm. at the same time. Like there's interesting stuff there. To me, I couldn't uncouple from knowing that this felt like it was pretty much stapled together. And to your point about the pilot or the first episode being a collection of footage from other shows and flashbacks. And, you know, I also have to say that I think after watching a couple of seasons of Daredevil, watching Hawkeye,
mm-hmm.
now watching this, I realize that I do not like Vincent D'Onofrio in the role of Kingpin. And I don't really have like a Kingpin in mind that I wish it was. I don't know whether it's maybe just the character is not that interesting to me, but I have been watching this guy whisper and beat the shit out of people,
yeah.
pretty passively for the last 8 years. And I think I'm just good. I kind of wish this story, I know that Echo is tied to Kingpin and that like it's whether or not she's going to embrace her destiny as Queenpin for him is like essentially what the last few episodes are about, and or whether or not she'll repair her relationships to her heritage back in Oklahoma with her grandmother, who's played by Tantu Cardinal, and she's really good. I guess I understand that, but like I really had a hard time like just like watching Vincent D'Onofrio in the show.
One of my favorite things is the reveal that like Wilson Fisk, the underlord kingpin of New York, has a shipping operation in Oklahoma.
Right.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think there's a case to be made, and maybe this isn't the right venue for it. Maybe this is more of a Ringerverse argument, but Vincent D'Onofrio's performance as Wilson Fisk is probably the most texturally accurate performance of anyone in the MCU.
In terms of its relationship to the comics?
Like he is just doing the comic book,
yeah.
in a way that is actually kind of breathtaking, but doesn't work because it is two-dimensional, I think,
yeah.
In the way that a comic book can be. I also just think that these shows, especially recently in the Marvel TV stuff, they've really struggled with tone, which is an interesting observation, I think, to make considering what made the MCU successful, even when the movies weren't totally successful, was the mastery of tone. To watch the first Iron Man again, there's a lot of stuff that's like, really? Like, it's not, when we think of Marvel at its peak, we're thinking of like the Russo brothers run with like Winter Soldier, and mm-hmm. it's a well-oiled machine and everything fits. The early stuff was not like that. And when we talked to Joanna Robinson about her great book, like, clearly, it wasn't like that behind the scenes, but
yeah.
they knew the tone and they nailed the tone and the tone won out. And this, like I said this 2 years ago and I'll say it again, like the charm of the Hawkeye comic book by Matt Fraction that they sort of adapted was entirely tone. He was like put upon human guy who
yeah.
kept getting the shit beat out of him by dopes and tracksuits. What it became in the show and what's echoed in Echo, this is literally the scene, is when he's just... he's signing to Maya, like, you and I, we're the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? That's what we're doing? The Daredevil show worked, I think, because of tone. you know, and this show doesn't seem to get it because it is at once trying to be like, hey, we're just doing a pulpy crime show here. It's fine. You know, there's elements of like a Blue-Eyed Samurai. There's a template for this kind of show, whether I respond to it or not, where I think it can be done well. But the heaviness of this, I mean, I don't even think you saw that the show begins with an otherworldly, I don't know if it's a flashback or a dream sequence, but something drawn from Choctaw history or mythology to try to take it off of the grounded earth level.
Yeah.
These decisions just burden the show in a way that feels like a bummer. And again, it's five episodes. You get what you get. Maybe it's fun to watch people break necks. Your mileage may vary.
You know what the tough thing is with the way that Marvel has decided to do these series, and especially as they do spinoffs. And I think Agatha will have like a similar question to answer, if not like a similar issue in its actual production, is sometimes like these characters work as part of a gallery of characters that are surrounding one story, right? Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily, like, their biography is not. Now, I would definitely be open to like an Echo series, but I think an Echo series that has to also tell Echo's entire story is tough. And then I think it kind of misses the point of like the pleasure of week-to-week comics and week-to-week television or episodic television, which is a certain economy of storytelling that's just like, here's this person's case of the week. Here's this person's obstacle that they have to get past this week, this episode, this issue. And like, there's a pleasure in watching a simple thing done well. I find that like the amount of heavy lifting that they have to do to connect this to a show with Daredevil, which we still don't know is actually ever going to see the light of day.
I think they're too committed for it not to, but
fair enough. And they definitely do some work towards the end of the series and towards in the stinger to like set up Daredevil a little bit, but it is, it's just a lot of work to constantly be like, you know, tending to all these different fires. And I just wonder whether or not they have now got enough evidence that the series, the episodic series, just need to be their own thing and the movies need to be their own thing. And trying to land Kang in a future trilogy of films through two seasons of Loki and an appearance in Ant-Man is just, there's too much at stake financially to, if that doesn't work out, what happens, you know?
Look, everything should be born again, not just Daredevil. Like, I
would like for the people who are involved in this show seem like incredibly talented, and I would love for them to have had a better shot at success here. I can't help but feel like this is going to be like one of the final lines in the chapter about, and then they rebooted the entire thing.
Yeah, because there was a thought, and we articulated this, we even advocated for it and believed in it, that Marvel was just going to become a continent of entertainment. And that within its borders, there would be room for people, different types of stories and different people's stories, you know? And in that world, like if they wanted to make a native hero, there are plenty of people whom they hired in various roles on the show who could give an interesting perspective on that. I'm not saying just like hand it to Sterling, but I mean like there are a lot of people from the larger extended Res Dogs universe and people we don't even know about who are talented enough and creative enough to bring a unique perspective to that story. But this is another example of everything that is brought into Marvel becomes Marvel. Mm-hmm. And what wins out? And who does that ultimately serve? Like, I appreciate the intention of being like, we are going to do a Choctaw language version of the show and we are going to be respectful of the heritage that we're drawing from and we're going to be thoughtful about who we hire and how we tell certain stories. And like, that's just good practices.
Yeah.
That's good practices for Hollywood. But ultimately what you end up with is a mediocre Marvel show.
Right.
You don't end up, I would be curious, and I mean this sincerely, if people walked away from watching Echo being like, I have a different appreciation for native culture or whatever aspect of it that sought to be highlighted. Or are they like, yeah, it was kind of cool. Right. And I don't know who wins when it's kind of cool.
We can wrap it up there. I think that also the binge release option here of putting this up all at once, you know, I'll be curious to see like the completion rate. We're not going to see that, but like to see whether or not it remains in the conversation, say in 10 days.
Do you think it's similar to the completion rate of The Watch?
Only in Thailand. We're putting up Echo is putting up Thai Watch completion rate numbers.
I don't want to put pressure on our beloved American fan base, but I understand that our fans in Thailand listen to the show at like slower speeds to savor it more. Like 0.8, 0.7.
I just started listening to stuff on 1.2.
You did not.
Yeah. I just kicked it up a little bit.
So just like, how do people sound?
I don't know if I like it. I was listening to Rosillo this morning talking about Nick Saban, and it just sounded like he was much more nervous about Nick Saban than I think he actually is.
Rosillo has a great radio voice.
Yeah, I love it, but I'm trying to get through a lot of titles in a day, you know?
You just got to drive more. You just got to take bigger trips. Now, of course, for me, with an electric vehicle, that's fine. That's carbon neutral. So for you, I guess you're just being thoughtful.
Drill, baby, drill.
That's
okay, let's wrap it up there. Interesting show for us today.
Did you think?
I think so. I think we covered a lot of topics.
I'm interested in our burgeoning like parenting corner. I think that's good for me.
For my imaginary teenage son?
Yeah, it's almost, we could call it parenting corner. And I feel like that would be a unique bit on a podcast from The Ringer.
We'll be back on Sunday night after True Detective is completed on HBO and on streaming. And we'll air our True Detective season four, or True Detective Night Country recap.
Yeah.
And our interview with Issa Lopez.
If we didn't say it at the beginning, because again, I like to spread out the stuff for the end. I'm very excited about this season. I really enjoyed the first episode.
I can't wait to talk to you about it.
And I'm excited about that and Monsieur Spade on Sunday nights, because I love
you love detectives.
TV.
That's all you just
I do
love
detectives.
Yeah. Detective, heal thyself.
They're my books about Congress.
Kaya, thank you for producing us. We'll be back on Sunday night.